Hi, everybody. This is The Takeaway, and I'm Arun Venugopal, in for Tanzina Vega. In the United States, many indigenous languages are dying out, despite efforts to preserve them. All but two of the 115 indigenous languages in the U.S. are in danger or at risk of extinction. The Administration for Native Americans budgets roughly $12 million annually to tribes to preserve native languages. But that is a small fraction of what was spent in the late 1800s and early 1900s to support boarding school infrastructure, which contributed to the decline of many indigenous languages. Here is Jessie Little Doe Baird, the vice chairwoman of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, testifying at a congressional hearing last year on efforts to maintain and revitalize native languages.
The story of America and how we became one great nation is a story woven from many different peoples and many different languages. The Wampanoag language is an important thread in that history. For us, the preservation of our language is the preservation of ourselves.
And while native languages are facing many threats today, some are taking steps to preserve them.
Osionagar Gohin Tawadon Talek Janelle Joplin, Missouri, Awatesadola, Digagi Gaelige, Michael Sarah Dundon, Agilis Jagesa, Francis Paulson, Dudon, Dilek Gohonihisti, Digadeshkwan. My name is Rebecca Nagel. I live in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and I grew up in Joplin, Missouri, and I am learning how to speak Cherokee.
Rebecca is a Cherokee writer and host of the This Land podcast. She recently reported on the extinction of Native American languages for High Country News.
There's not one U.S. federal policy that you can pin down as the cause, but I think one of the examples that stands out the most is the boarding school era. So starting in the 1870s and continuing well into the 1900s, the United States established a system of boarding schools across the United States where an estimated third of Indian children at the time were sent. The idea behind these schools famously was to kill the Indian and save the man. So the idea was that Native people would still exist. There would still be Indian people in the United States, but there would no longer be tribes. We would no longer have distinct culture, and we would no longer have our languages. So in boarding schools, Native kids were punished for speaking their languages. The boarding schools were also places of well-documented and systemic physical and sexual abuse. But it's not the only policy that the United States government created to assimilate Native Americans into mainstream white culture. You know, there's over a century of the United States doing things like banning Native religions, giving Indians incentives to move off the reservation and into urban areas, systemically adopting Native kids out of Indian homes, and the list goes on.
And this dark legacy of sending kids to boarding schools, essentially of separating them from the culture, many people consider that a form of genocide. Am I right?
Yes, it was a form of cultural genocide. And so I think that when we do learn about Native history, you know, we learn about things like the Trail of Tears. We learn about things like Wounded Knee and basically the era of Indian Wars. And what happened in the late 1800s is the United States decided that it would even be more cost effective. You know, there are, you can look up documents of that time, people arguing about it, that it would be more cost-effective rather than focusing on annihilating Indians to focus on assimilating us. So to get us to sort of abandon our identity as tribal people and to assimilate into mainstream white society.
From the perspective of indigenous communities, what are the main hurdles to keeping their languages alive?
There are a lot of different estimates on how many indigenous languages are endangered and how many are healthy. And it's actually kind of interesting that there's not, that the United States itself doesn't have more of an official number, but Ethnologue does. And, you know, when they look at the health of a language, they look at how old are the speakers. And so languages that are considered, you know, really on the path to extinction and in extreme danger are languages where the speakers are older than, they're not having kids anymore. So they're not of an age where they're still having kids so they could raise kids and just pass the language on to the next generation. And so that's the situation with Cherokee. Most of our speakers are over the age of 60, and we're facing this cliff where if we don't raise another generation that knows the language 20, 30 years from now, there won't be people who still speak Cherokee. You know, I think there are a lot of challenges. I think one of the hard things is just the complete pervasiveness and dominance of English. And so whether it's TV or Facebook or social media, English is everywhere. And two, I would make the point that, you know, at a time when we had a lot of people speaking Cherokee in our communities, you know, we had a time as a tribe where we actually operated our own co-ed public education system that was bilingual. So kids actually learned in English and in Cherokee. And this was prior to Oklahoma becoming a state. So in the 1800s, our kids had a higher literacy rate and our citizens had a higher literacy rate than white people in surrounding states at the time. And what happened when Oklahoma became a state and we went through allotment is that those schools were taken over by the federal government and then eventually by the state, and they became a place where Native kids were actually punished for speaking their language. And so after generations of kids were mistreated in public schools for speaking their language, people stopped teaching their kids, even, you know, made an effort for their younger siblings to speak English because people didn't want their family members to go through what they had gone through.
So plenty of reasons to be pessimistic. Is there any reason to be optimistic at this moment from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there are a lot of language programs that are having really positive outcomes. I participate in a language program. I'm an adult learner and I'm with a language program with my tribe. You know, there are immersion schools across the United States, and those schools aren't just having good outcomes for language, but they're also just having really good outcomes for kids. So kids that grow up connected in their culture have higher self-esteem, have higher achievements, have higher graduation rates. There is a lot of studies about how beneficial it is for kids to be bilingual. And so we have those success stories. And I think, you know, the main point I wanted to make in the article is just that the funding doesn't match the scale of the problem. And so, you know, when only there are 573 federally recognized tribes in the United States. Most are dealing in some way or another with preserving or revitalizing or bringing back their language. And if only a handful of those tribes every year can get support for those efforts, you know, that means that most don't have the resources that they need. You know, a lot of tribes are doing what they can do on their own, but I hope that the conversation that the article starts is, what does it mean, you know, that our government was willing to spend so much money on the eradication of Native languages and Native culture that now it's willing to spend so much less on language revitalization?
Rebecca Nagel is host of This Land podcast. She's also a Cherokee writer and student of the Cherokee language. Rebecca, you want to share some Cherokee with us to go out on?
Yeah. Instead of saying goodbye in Cherokee, we say, like, until I see you again. So you can say, "Dota gohani," and that's until we all see each other again.
Thank you so much, Rebecca Nagel.
Thank you.